Help me see the error of my false idea of God and his expectations. I came to understand that God actually gives us permission to express our strongest emotions and our most intimate thoughts, even in the most raw and difficult forms. Learning this transformed my life, transformed my relationship with God, and it continues to enlarge my soul. So this morning we're going to look at how God gives us permission to express our grief, the different stages of grief and loss in the process, and different ways that we can express our raw thoughts and emotions. First, does God truly give us permission to grieve? The short answer is absolutely yes. In fact, God invites us to grieve and express our losses and pain when needed. God gives us permission to grieve our losses. Many parts of the Bible show men and women of great faith who wrestled with difficult feelings in the middle of great pain and loss. Never are they shown as weak or inferior spiritually because of their struggles. One example of this is the Book of Lamentations. It was written by the prophet Jeremiah after the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. And the temple that was also destroyed, that was considered the center of Jewish worship. In one sense, Jeremiah's entire existence had been turned upside down. His home city and the symbol of his people's relationship with God had been destroyed by a foreign nation, by the Babylonians. The people were then forced into exile and slavery. Jeremiah was describing his personal experience when he wrote the Book of Lamentations. It is a poetic work of Jeremiah's response to the tragic destruction of his city. Now listen to his words as he wrestles with his God. Lamentations 3, 1 through 18, we'll read. I am the man who has seen affliction by the rod of the Lord's wrath. He has driven me away and made me walk in darkness rather than light. Indeed, he has turned his hand against me again and again all day long. He has made my skin and my flesh grow old and has broken my bones. He has besieged me and surrounded me with bitterness and hardship. He has made me dwell in darkness like those long dead. He has walled me in so I cannot escape. He has weighed me down with chains. Even when I call out or cry for help, he shuts out my prayer. He has broken my teeth with gravel. He has trampled me in the dust. I have been deprived of peace. I have forgotten what prosperity is. So I say, my splendor is gone, and all that I had hoped from the Lord. Now, Jeremiah is addressing God directly and states that it was him that brought about these events. There are different ways to look at God's control of events in the world. And Jeremiah knew that it was the Babylonians that conquered Jerusalem, but that did not stop him from recognizing that God had not intervened and God allowed this event to take place. This is why Jeremiah speaks of God bringing him great pain, even though it was not him directly. The imagery here is of deep pain and harsh treatment, but these are not the words of a rebellious person or a hater of God, but rather of a faithful servant of God, one with an intimate relationship with him, who had sacrificed everything to do his will. There is no reprimand later of Jeremiah's attitude. There is no correction of his thoughts or of holding God responsible for this tragedy. These words are presented to us as part of the Holy Scriptures, sacred words, sacred thoughts, and sacred feelings. And this is only one example of many found throughout the Bible of people wrestling with their grief, losses, and even God himself. Their presence here in the Bible reveals to us a heavenly Father who gives permission and even invites us to express our grief. So God does give us permission to grieve. But what do the experts say? What do the mental health experts say about the process of grief and loss? Well, they tell us that grief and loss is normally a process of different stages. Psychiatrist and author Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is known for developing the model of the five stages of grief. She acknowledged that they were not always sequential or linear or rigid, but they give us a framework to understand the spectrum of human thought and emotions as we process loss and tragedy. Let's look at them right now while we keep in mind the words of Jeremiah. Here are the five stages: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. The stages are not presented as an illness or mental health disorder, but rather as a natural way that people process and heal from their grief and loss. Each stage has a purpose in moving the person forward towards healing and integration of their loss into their life. Let's look at the first stage, denial. This is when one first becomes aware of a loss or tragedy. The first moments are often of shock, disbelief, and numbness. The person cannot imagine that this event actually happened. Surely Jeremiah felt this when he first witnessed the destruction of the temple and his city. This was not the time for him to write or express himself. Surely he was at a loss for words and overwhelmed by the event. Some people refuse to leave this stage. They deny, minimize, or ignore their loss. They might say things like, "I'm fine. I'm okay. Don't worry about me. Just have to keep moving on." Or, "This can't be. This is impossible." Anger is the second stage, which involves anger and frustration. The anger may be directed at a person related to the loss, at God, or anyone near them at this time. It may even be directed at oneself, at ourselves. It might grow within us and only come out when we cannot contain it. People in this stage may lose their temper for minor frustrations. We see these feelings expressed in Lamentations chapter 3. Jeremiah feels as if God has brought him great pain and has not heard his prayers. People might say things like, "Where were you, God? Why did you let this happen? If you would have only been there, if you would have only taken better care of yourself, you would still be alive. This is unfair. I don't deserve this." The third stage is bargaining. This is a stage where the grieving person seeks to find a way to keep things from changing. They try to negotiate with God or their situation to keep everything the same. They resist acknowledging the loss or tragedy that will mark them forever and may seek a way to reverse the situation. "The doctor gave the diagnosis, but I don't believe it. My wife left me, but I know that she will come back eventually. I lost my job, but now I'm going to church every Sunday so that I know I will be okay." This stage goes beyond being hopeful. It is trying to ignore the impact of loss or change. It is another phase of denial, trying to resolve what oftentimes is unresolvable. Now, it is interesting to read the gospel accounts of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Here, Jesus is suffering as he considers his coming crucifixion, and he prays to God the Father for a way to not suffer on the cross. Jesus is considering the coming emotional and physical pain and is asking if there is another way. Ultimately, his prayer is, "Not my will, but yours be done." But even Jesus Christ in his humanity was looking for a way to not face the suffering of the cross. Yet he did not sin, disbelieve, or dishonor the Father at any moment. He willingly made the ultimate sacrifice. But after this process, the fourth stage is depression. This is the stage where reality sets in and the grieving person begins to feel a great sadness as they consider the weight of their loss. Their energy is very low, and the stage can be long and exhausting. There might be silence in the stage or little social interaction. I just do not feel like doing anything. I'm tired. I just miss them so much. I will never get over this. I will never be happy again. In the verses of Lamentations 3, 17 through 18, we hear Jeremiah describe his loss of peace, prosperity, and his hope in God. These words describe a depressed man, devastated by his tragic loss. However, Jeremiah does not remain in this stage. He moves on. And his next words show his path forward, and a path that we can also follow. First, though, Jeremiah had to go through a stage of profound sadness and pain before hope would return. And the final stage of grief is acceptance. This is the stage where the person comes to accept the reality of their loss. They still feel all of their emotions, but they acknowledge that the situation cannot be undone, that they must seek healing to move on. I know that they are not coming back now. I still feel sad, but I know that the pain will fade with time. It's been very hard, but I am ready to start moving on. I will never be the same, but I have hope. Jeremiah seemed to pass through all these stages and ultimately found acceptance of his losses by clinging to his faith in God, God's goodness, rather than the circumstances of tragic events. Listen to his words, his next words, and how he moves from a place of grief and sadness to a place of hope and peace. In Lamentations 3, 19 through 26, it says here, "I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord." There is a wrestling here and a clinging to faith in the midst of great pain and tragedy. Jeremiah finds hope and clings to his faith while still feeling deeply hurt, depressed, and angry. He is trusting that God's goodness will come, even in the midst of great tragedy. These stages definitely involve difficult feelings, reflections, and decisions to move forward. They can be engaged or resisted to avoid the inevitable pain. The most important thing is to be patient and to keep reflecting and moving towards hope, even if it is hard and takes a long time. Passing through these stages is difficult, but necessary and healing. And right now, I'd like to invite somebody special to me to share a testimony about her experience with grief when she moved with me, with my family, to Argentina in 2010.
This was a lot easier to practice in my bedroom. And all of these worship songs really stirred up a lot. So I am more emotional than I thought I was going to be while I was practicing. 13 years ago, my son was a year and a half. And we were in language school in Argentina. And we were eager to give him a little brother or sister. And so 3 months into our Spanish, we got pregnant, and we were super excited. And at 8 weeks, we saw the little heartbeat. We saw the little peanut inside of me. And we went back at 12 weeks, And that is where I learned the Spanish word for heartbeat, because there was no heartbeat. And I remember complete shock and devastation of this future that we had thought was going to be part of our family. And I remember being like a zombie, where my husband was just moving me from one doctor to a hospital to a surgery room. And I just followed along because I had no energy emotionally or physically. And I remember the last ultrasound, because we had to have an ultrasound again to make sure that this was true, that our baby was no longer living. And I just remember, God, you can do a miracle here. You can heal our baby. And it didn't happen. And so I had to have a surgery. And I remember, okay, this happens sometimes. It wasn't the end of the world. I was eager to get pregnant again. And 6 months later, I found myself in the same position. We saw the little heartbeat at 8 weeks, and then at 12 weeks, there was no heartbeat. And that one turned into, that miscarriage turned into a possible cancer scare, because my hormone levels could have spiked and caused cancer. I remember not wanting to leave my house. I remember not wanting to go to church because there was another mom with a belly who was pregnant the same time I was, and I didn't want to see her growing belly. And I didn't want to see moms nursing their babies. I just wanted to hide myself away. And I was thinking, God, you asked me to leave my family and my culture and my language. And you asked me to share your good news, but it doesn't feel very good right now. And this is really when I had my very first faith crisis. I believed there was a God. He existed because I'd felt him. I knew his power. I heard him speak to me. But at this moment, my faith crisis was he did not feel like a good God. And so I wrestled with that, and I was angry, and I was very just trying to put myself in a protective bubble. And I found a book, and I wanted to escape my reality, and so I started reading this book. And in one of the chapters, it was specifically from me, God speaking to me, and if you want to ask me about it later, you can. And it brought me hope. And about a few months later, I read two other books. The same night, I read one chapter in one, and one chapter in the other. And there was the same message. And again, it was just the Holy Spirit, just God speaking to me again, helping me release my grief and helping me to find hope and to understand his sovereignty in the world. And by God's goodness, I was able to go back to the United States and grieve with my whole family. We had a ceremony where we could honor our little baby's lives. And we also named our babies, which also helped with grief. And I also bought this ring with two little baby hearts that represent my babies in heaven, our babies in heaven, as more steps to this grief. And 13 years later, as you can tell, I'm still raw. It's still hard. He's carried me through, and I've been able to encourage people on that journey when they've had miscarriages. But I'm still on a grief journey, and I'm allowed to. So that's my story.
Thank you, Beth. Every process is different. Every person is different and unique, and I'm glad that Beth is able to share her story. It's part of our story of grief and loss. And when we grieve, we might think that there are certain thoughts and emotions that we should not express to God. Maybe we're angry with him. Maybe we feel like we're losing our faith. Maybe we are doubting God's goodness and faithfulness to us. If this is true of us, God already knows. He knows your thoughts. He knows your pain and your feelings. And it's good to remember that God can handle the expression of our darkest thoughts and our most intense emotions. He can handle the expression of your darkest thoughts and your most intense emotions. They may harm other people, they often do, but you can't harm God. And we see this in Lamentations, in the words of Jeremiah, dark expressions of pain, suffering, and even God's distance. We also find examples in the Bible of people asking God where he is and why he has not answered them. Each person is not rejected by God, but rather they encounter him in their most difficult moment. Sometimes answers are not given in the form of an explanation or a problem resolved, but God reveals his presence, his compassion, and love through many different ways. Many people have found their peace after wrestling with God, maybe shouting, crying, and expressing their doubts and fears. And one example that I always think of is from a famous movie. I think the image just came up. You might know this movie, Forrest Gump. And a film character that had a profound impact on me is that of Lieutenant Dan, who's on the guy with no legs on the right. Lieutenant Dan was a military soldier, and he felt that his destiny was to give his life in battle, just like many of his ancestors had done before him. However, when he was wounded in battle, his friend Forrest carried him to safety and saved his life. The harsh reality was that Dan needed to have his legs amputated, and he struggled to face a life afterwards with this physical disability. Dan became angry, depressed, and fell into alcoholism and reckless living. One of the most striking scenes of this movie is when Dan and Forrest started working on a fishing boat, trying to make a living fishing for shrimp. They did not have much luck, and Forrest began to pray that God would help them. Now, Dan did not have any faith in God at this point. Listen to this dialogue in one of the most memorable scenes of this movie. Dan says, "Forrest, where is this God of yours?" As they're on the boat and they are not catching any shrimp. And Forrest narrates this scene, explaining that was when God showed up in the form of a wild storm. Forrest states that he was afraid, but Dan was mad. And Lieutenant Dan remained on the boat's mast during the storm, and he begins to yell at God. Here's what he said with a few edits. "You'll never sink this boat. Come on. You call this a storm? Blow, you. Blow. It's time for a showdown. You and me. I'm right here. Come and get me. You'll never sink this boat." And he laughs this awful, hysterical laugh. And Dan yells with all of his strength, challenging God in anger and frustration. A small man, full of pain and grief, screaming at a big, powerful God. And the next day we find out that Lieutenant Dan and Forrest miraculously survived the storm. And in the aftermath of this, Lieutenant Dan tells Forrest, when everything calms down, he tells Forrest, "I never actually thanked you for saving my life." And Forrest, looking back, remarks, "He never actually said so, but I think that was when Lieutenant Dan made his peace with God." Now, this is just a movie, but maybe the story resonates with you, and maybe it reveals some truth about our God. We do not have answers for all our losses and sufferings. However, God gives us permission to express our doubts, frustrations, and even anger towards Him. He can take it. And as many have said, to be angry at God means that we must first acknowledge His existence. And I'm convinced that sometimes authentic prayer looks like Lieutenant Dan yelling and crying out to God in the midst of a powerful storm. Sometimes we sit in silence. Sometimes we yell at the top of our lungs. Whatever is within us, we can give that to God. He can take it. And I'm convinced that this process of grief and loss leads to healing, peace, and even a deep relationship with a loving, compassionate God. This is an enlarged soul, living fully and able to face the darkness, trusting that God's light and mercy will win with time. So God has given you permission to grieve and feel. What will you do with that permission? And grief is a process that is deeply spiritual. So I ask you, is there a loss, change, or trauma that you still need to address? And finally, God is not afraid of your intense emotions, your dark thoughts, and lingering doubts. Do you have anything that you need to express to God or to a trusted friend? So your next step might be to pray to God about these things. It might be to speak with a trusted friend or a leader here at Christ Church or somewhere else, or to attend a workshop on grief here at Christ Church. And today we have that opportunity if you'd like to come later today. Maybe the best next step would be to just go and listen to the message that Lisa gave last week, full of practical ways to express grief and loss and to help others in that process. We're going to continue to just reflect and to think and to pray as John comes and he leads us in the Lord's Supper.